The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Okay, well, we'll talk a little bit of Wolves, I think. But there's still some, like, basketball
going
on.
Man, I just cannot find their games on any channels right now. I can't find any news on them. Like, nothing's happening. So we might have to find other things to talk about.
Well, we could probably find some news on them lately in the last couple of weeks. But, boy, we kind of dissected all that stuff last week when we just before we had Meredith on last week. But we'll get to the Wolves in a little bit. But we got a guest on this week. Very good friend of the podcast. This is... And he's going to give me crap now because I'm bringing it back up again. But this is his fourth time on the podcast, but the third official episode.
The third one that people have heard.
And
that is right. We recorded for like an hour and you guys can't exit. You guys lost it.
Hold on. First off, you guys, that was Manny.
No, it was all me, man. James, it was all me.
It's both you guys. It's one phone call. One team, one fight.
Second of all, we were just getting to know each other and bond. But I really just wanted to congratulate you on your sweep of the your Celtics sweep of the Cavaliers, and console you on your getting swept by the Warriors.
Don't you dare get the basketball gods riled up like that. Don't you do it.
I've been sitting on that since like when I went to bed last night, so I had to get that out.
So I got a question for you guys. Where did Minnesota fall in the lottery?
They didn't. For the first time in 14 years.
Your playoff run was so short, I forgot it even happened. I apologize.
He's got to throw shots. But you know what? But see, James, here's the deal. James Hollis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin', by the way, in case you're wondering.
Our listeners have more rocks than that, though. That's a funny thing.
But see, James, here's the thing, though. Like, we've been, like, with just all the off-the-court news that's gone on just in the last couple of weeks with the Wolves, it's like... We kind of ourselves kind of like forgot that they had a first round playoff series this year just because of everything going on with, you know, people, tweets and reports and all this other stuff.
Most successful team in 15 years, and we couldn't be more miserable.
You know what, man? You guys have to catch me up either on or offline while we're talking because, you know, I've been kind of embroiled in my own thing as far as, you know, my team keeps winning. My team is, you know, two games away from the finals. I didn't keep track of what the people who are home on the couch were doing. You know, I know whatever vacation plans they're doing in Tahiti. I didn't see the tweets, so you guys got to fill me in sooner or later.
Damn it! I'm glad you're back on with us. Okay, so let's talk about the Celtics for a second because, I mean, come on, you yourself didn't even expect this in these first two games, did you,
dude? I mean, I wrote a 2,000-word compendium about why the Celtics would be in the finals this year. No, that's a lie. I didn't know they'd get past Milwaukee. So, all right, a little backstory for all the listeners. As a Celtics fan, you know, before the season, with Gordon Hayward, Kyrie, boom, I was telling people, this team can go to the finals. This is before, you know, I didn't know that the Cavs would stink. I didn't know that Gordon Hayward would get hurt. I just saw that roster, and I told everybody, hey, you know what? Jalen's young, but they're long, they're athletic, they're going to be switchy, boom.
They're Marcus deep.
Morris, hey. Right. Gordon got hurt, and of course that all changed. But even then, I was like, they're going to still make noise. You know, I think 538 said 37 wins. People were saying, you know, prognosticators, oh, they might get the sixth seed now without Gordon Hayward. I said, no. This team's still going to win over 50. They're still going to be a handful. And at least I was right about that. But then when Kyrie went down, you know, I scale my expectations back a lot. And I just wanted these young guys to get experience in playoffs, no one to get injured, and don't embarrass themselves. Don't get beat by like 50.
Right.
So I'm going to be honest with you. I called Milwaukee because I figured Giannis Antetokounmpo already been to the playoffs. He's a, you know, MVP-type candidate player. I didn't really watch the Bucks very much this season. So I'm like, all right, well, this, you know, he might go nuts right now. And everyone else has told me, no, they're a stupid team. They're ill-coached. Boston's going to win. I didn't know. So I was like, I have Milwaukee in seven. Boston won. Philly. I said, man, Philly, I thought they beat Miami.
Yeah.
Philly looked really cool. And beat Simmons. I said, man, this might be Philly in six. I said, Philly looks like they might be going to the finals. Because I thought they could beat the Cavs after watching the Cavs versus Indiana. Boom. Boston in five. You know, so I didn't expect any of this. I did not expect to be up 2-0 on the Cavs. So it's all when Kyrie went down, I became the Zen fan, which means, you know, I didn't worry about any of this stuff. Everything was gravy. And so all of this is just delicious gravy just pouring down my gullet.
See, the attitude that I've seen from Celtics fans once, as soon as Gordon went down, was it like, you know, the season, you know, whatever happens, happens. You know, they're just playing with house money right now. Nothing matters. And all of a sudden, this team is probably going to the NBA Finals all of a sudden.
Look, I'm still going to say this. I said I was the appropriate fear of LeBron James, right? LeBron, we know he came back 3-1 against the Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, and even, sure, Draymond was out and Kyrie. But see, that's the real thing that gives me a lot of optimism is that we see that LeBron James just can't do it by himself, and he is the only creator they have out there.
He's had a 40-point triple-double, and they lost by 13.
Well, that's the thing is, like last night, you're watching the first half, and you know, and the Celtics are still getting like wide open shots in the first half. That's the thing people forget about game two is like the Cavaliers actually had like an 11-point lead at one point in the game.
But it was halftime.
Right. But you're not. Then you look at how the second half went, and you're like, how did Cleveland even jump up by 11? But it's because LeBron is having this monster first half, and you're just thinking, okay, this is another one of those triple-double LeBron 40-plus, and he's going to will the Cavs to a series-tying victory, and then just the wheels just, for whatever reason, came tumbling off in the second half. I don't know, like, what – J.R. Smith, dude, like, what the hell? Like, what was that?
This is a lot like the same problem that the Cavs had against the Celtics. They just don't have, I mean, they being the Cavs, they don't have enough guys who are just can play both sides of the ball and not just play it like just because you're out there, just actually do something with the ball. While Boston has a plethora of those guys. Like this game, the Celtics, they formed like Voltron because the first quarter, boom, Jalen went for 14. Second quarter, Tatum had that beautiful run of like 9 straight points.
Yeah.
Third quarter, our boy Scary Terry drops 14. And in the fourth quarter, you know, it was like a 6-point game. And all of a sudden, Al Horford scored like 8 in a row. That's like team basketball.
It's everybody.
And guess what? During the whole game, Smart had 9 assists. And he had 0 turnovers. And he had 5 rebounds. And he had, you know, the clutch tip in, the clutch tip out.
The steal
where he did on the Gore. He was the connective tissue. And everybody else was the arms and the legs of this Voltron, and LeBron couldn't overcome it. You know, so that was like the epitome of a team win. And this is my favorite Celtics team. I love Kevin Garnett's one of my favorite players of all time. Him and Scottie Pippen.
Mine too. Yep.
But this is my this season, just because of the context and the way they came together. This has been my favorite Celtics team probably of all time. Just favorite, not the best, obviously, but my favorite team to watch.
I'm just rewatching game two last night or earlier today and just seeing how the entire Cavaliers offense was built upon Love and LeBron two-man game and Tristan Thompson tip-ins. But the Celtics, like, they're just so confident. They just never relent. Even they're down 11, it's like you never got the sense they had even the hint to give up because they were still getting wide open threes and they could tell that the Cavs defense was a disaster. It's just, and they just kept going and they came on top at the end, and I don't think anyone in that room was surprised.
Well, I mean, I heard a stat today. I'm almost embarrassed to say where I heard it, but it was only a YouTube clip, so I wasn't watching the show. I think Skip Bayless said it.
Oh, your favorite show.
Oh, God, I hate him. I can't stand him. No, you know what? He's a huckster. He's entertainment. Not for me, whatever. I'm not going to badmouth Skip. You know he's an idiot most times. But I guess 18 games, the Celtics were down double digits and came back to win this year. Like, I don't know if it's a record or what, but that's a lot of games.
Manny, what's that like, coming back to win games?
Coming back to win games. We should ask some Wolves opponents about that question. We should ask Wolves opponents about that.
It's just such an amazing feeling to know that, like, no matter what point of the game I'm watching, I don't really stress because I'm like, yeah, they might come back. And then fourth quarter, they're down 12, and they, you know, it goes back and forth, and like 3 minutes left, they're still down. I'm like, all right, it's probably over now. But I've watched, you know, the Rockets game; they came back from like 25. So, yeah, man, it's an incredible team, and like I'm just already thinking about next season. You throw Gordon Hayward in the mix, you throw Kyrie Irving back in this mix. Oof. You're gonna be able to put out 6-7 guys that like 8 guys that can start, and they're gonna constantly be in rotation, and they're gonna, you know. Like, we watched, man. Like, Kevin Love thought he had Terry Rozier in the post. And while the pass is in the air, Aaron Baines comes over and they seamlessly make a switch. And all
of a sudden, large man.
It's incredible to watch these guys. They trust each other. You can tell they enjoy playing together. You know, so I'm really just amped up about next season.
Well, Manny, you were saying
Even while they might go to the finals, I'm already thinking ahead. So go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Well, Manny was saying on the air today how there's really no incentive for Danny Ainge to move any of these guys without seeing how Kyrie and Hayward all play together with this group, because that makes an already deep roster even deeper.
I agree on one point as a fan. As a fan, I don't want to see anybody go. I would love to see them somehow pay Smart, pay Rozier. You know, I don't care about this rich, you know, rich old white man's money. Pay everybody and keep them all. And we all prosper. We know it's not going to happen. Because, look, there has to be – it's a business side, too. Terry Rozier, and not this summer coming up, but the next summer, he's going to command a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Boston probably won't – they can't just let him walk. I mean, that's just bad business, you know. Smart this summer is going to – you know, they're going to try to – hope. I'm just – my fingers crossed, another team will throw him a big offer because they'll just won't match it. They'll have to let him go, you know. So there's business decisions to be made. You just can't play – you know, 10 guys, and like Marcus Morris had a big role this year. It's going to shrink, and he might not like it, and they might have to have a talk with him this summer, and then he might, you know, might part ways.
That would honestly, the sooner the better on that one. But it seems like Danny Ainge is smart. I mean, he cut bait with Avery Bradley at the right time before a lot of his sexual assault stuff came out and before his play declined a little bit. So, I mean, if there's anyone who can do it, it's probably him.
Declined a lot. Let's be real. Avery Bradley, before the Pistons traded Avery Bradley, the Pistons fans and bloggers I followed hated Avery. They hated him as a player. They keep saying, you know, I heard he was a good guy. Then, of course, the sexual assault stuff, you know, no one wants to deal with a player with that kind of rep, so that already turned him off. But he was so bad as a player. So, yeah, we can look at all the players. Crowder went to Cleveland, and he still, even though he looks better in Utah, you know, he didn't look anywhere near as good as he looked in Boston. Evan Turner, Brad Stevens has a magic touch. He has a magic touch.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how just players can kind of go in and out of Boston over the last couple of years, and it just seems to be the transition with new players going in just seems to be so seamless. You know what I mean?
He got Evan Turner paid.
Yeah, yeah. And Portland just inexplicably went and gave him a lot of money, which I still don't understand.
And Terry Stotts is a good coach, but just to have that strong of a culture where you can have that kind of drop off, you know, once guys leave, it's amazing.
Four guys. They returned four players from last year's Eastern Conference Finals team. And those four players, I think three of them were reserves in Smart, Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier. Like, that's incredible. This summer they brought in a whole new team basically, and they still
the biggest pieces haven't been, you know, significant contributors. Kyrie didn't play the whole season. Hayward played 3 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever it was.
Well, you guys know Coach Thorpe, right?
David Thorpe, right? ESPN.
Yeah, Coach David Thorpe, used to be an ESPN contributor. Now he just, I just see him on Twitter. He did raise an interesting thing, and his hypothesis was wrong. But, like, once you open the Pandora's box of minutes and touches for young guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, it's going to be really hard to kind of compact them back and say, okay, now we need you to be good foot soldiers.
Yeah.
And play a role off of Gordon Hayward. And I think the one positive is Gordon Hayward, I think, is kind of a guy like Al Horford, but he doesn't care about scoring. He wants to win and play the right basketball. So I don't think he's going to be I think he'll be fine, especially, you know, come back from that ankle injury. I think he'll be fine and he'll be like a younger Al Horford, as in, I'm taking care of the young guys and I just kind of fill in the gaps. That's going to be cool. But still, Kyrie's coming back. So it's going to be interesting to see how they juggle the minutes and the touches next year. It'll be really interesting.
It seems like, though, if there's a guy that can do it, it's Brad Stevens, right? At this
Absolutely.
Point, I mean, just with what he's shown, with just all the new moving parts and everybody, you know, the new players coming in and other guys going out. I mean, it just seems like if there's a perfect guy to be able to handle a situation like this, like an embarrassment of riches, he is the guy that's capable of handling it the right way.
Absolutely. And it's a good problem to have, right? It's a great problem to have.
Yeah. Happy problem.
All these young guys have value. They're like, Ainge, he did a bang-up job of analyzing these players. He wanted to bring in guys of a certain mindset and mentality, and he's gotten those guys. And, you know, again, Marcus Morris, I love his toughness, but I got a feeling next year he's going to bristle a little bit. They say, hey, no more 26 minutes a game. You're going to be playing 15. And that's fine. I guarantee Angel talked to him. Okay, you understand what's happening here, and it's not. Well, I'll do my best to find a great spot for you. You know, so I have no worries, man. Those, especially Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Those are my two large adult sons, and I just love watching them play.
Oh, Jaylen Brown's one of my favorite players in the league already, man. I just love that kid. I love the way he plays. I love the attitude that he has when he comes out there, and just his style of play. I love his style of play, and just he's gonna be terrific for a long time, man. I love him.
I wonder how Wolves fans feel knowing that Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown are making combined like $11 million for the next couple of years, and then Andrew Wiggins is making like 30, almost 35.
And you could add like Jamal Murray in there too, who they also could have drafted, who's probably making like $4 million or whatever. So for $15 million, you could have had those three. Well, except not really, but at any rate.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a big Jamal Murray guy, but he's fine.
Let me ask you on the flip side on the Cavs now, because this is just bad.
Fire this team into the sun.
This is just like Derek's been saying this for months on the pod. Like, we're just so over this team. Like, I love LeBron. I'm a LeBron fan, but just this collection, you know, and they made the two big trades, you know, back in February or whatever. So it's kind of a new team from what they started the year with. But it's still just the same Cavs where you're just kind of sick of them and just saying, you know what, just blow this thing up and, you know, LeBron leaves and they just start all over. Because it's just, they're not fun to watch anymore, man. Even as great a player as LeBron is, it's like they're not an enjoyable team to watch anymore.
I think we almost have LeBron fatigue, man, which is insane because, like, the other night he scored that 21 in the first quarter or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he hit that one crazy turnaround over Marcus Smart, you know, and that shot is going to lead, you know, it was on SportsCenter or whatever, but like still like, oh, we've seen it before. We've seen him do that before. And, you know, we're talking about a triple-double, but yeah, and I almost feel, well, we all agree here, their GM didn't do him any favors. They didn't do him any favors by, you know, they tried, and at the time it seemed like a good idea to trade Kyrie for Isaiah and the pick, and but then they try to reset it, and George Hill and Clarkson, and none of the moves have worked out. And now LeBron is left with this. And I'm not going to say he doesn't deserve it because I don't believe that. You know, like it feels like it's terrible for him. He's a multimillionaire and best player of his generation, possibly the greatest of all time. So, but this, at his stage of career, at this stage in his career, that franchise is not doing what they should do to put the talent around him, you know? So.
It just seems like all the pieces that they tried to add, they didn't realize that they were more marginal than they thought they were. Even with that, all right, we're getting out all the pieces that don't fit and don't work. And, like, at best, they were just a small upgrade. I mean, Jordan Clarkson didn't even play last night. I think a lot of us thought that George Hill was a lot better of a player, but he's kind of just a guy. And
absolutely
I think
did.
That's what's killing him. Partially.
I mean, Rodney Hood averaged like 15, 16 a game last year for a playoff team.
Yeah.
And, like, played big games. And this year, even, you know, sure, they traded him, but he was averaging, like, 17 a game. You know, and they did start turning the corner, and he was still, you know, he was still averaging 17 a game, and they traded him. So, like, it's – okay, so bear with me here and tell me – I know it sounds crazy. Clear your mind a little bit.
Okay.
If they got Jay Crowder, who was, you know, almost – people considered him a borderline all-star last year, which I thought was nuts, but he was that good. And they get a guy like, you know, Jordan Clarkson was averaging almost 16, 17 a game for a bad team. Mm-hmm. Rodney Hood for a playoff team. They all come and play with LeBron, and all of a sudden they forget how to play basketball. When do we start turning, and what's the common denominator?
You know, I was just going to ask you, like, is at what point do we start to look at LeBron and just say, like, there's only, like, really for him to win championships, there's only, like, two or three players in the league that, like, he can play with.
Hey, Kobe needed two of the best front courts at the time, so to win championships.
Because the problem the Cavs seem to have is just, like, everything sort of runs through him. So everything is kind of dictated by him. And, you know, if Kevin Love, I mean, Kevin Love is not Chris Bosh, but LeBron needs Kevin Love to be Chris Bosh if they're going to win a championship. Like, George Hill is not Dwayne Wade, but the Cavaliers need, you know, they need George Hill to be Dwayne Wade of, you know, 2012 or whatever, if they're going to win a championship. And he's just not that at all. And it just, that's where you have to look at LeBron and say, like, is it him? Is it a problem? Like, I don't know.
Even then, those Heat teams, though, never really clicked until LeBron started deferring. Or not deferring, but really, you know, asserting himself, and Wade and others took a step back and worked off him.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I almost feel, I don't want to blame him, obviously. He's the greatest, you know, of his generation.
Right.
Top two players. But at the same time, like, George Hill's just last year, you know, before he got hurt in the playoffs, he was averaging like 17-5 or whatever. He was an integral part of that Jazz team last year, and they got hurt, you know. And this year, he was like, I think he's one of the best 3-point shooters in the league. And he was a jerk for going to Sacramento, been pissing and moaning about minutes, but whatever.
Right.
Just last year, you know, Jay Crowder went to Utah this year and immediately became an impact bench player. And he was like, hey, you know, there's actually a system here, and it makes sense. And that's the thing about playing with LeBron. It's basically you kind of just get in where you fit in. He's going to dribble around and do stuff, and you got to just kind of fade to the corner. If you see him going here, you got to make sure you're here. But you don't know when you're going to get touches. You don't know. So I bet it's tough. It's tough playing with LeBron James.
Yeah.
It's like 5-on-5 pickup ball. And I think the funny thing about George Hill, not to go on a tangent here, he didn't want to play for Tibbs, where he could have had all the minutes in the world.
Right.
But then he goes to Sacramento. He's like, wait, I'm not playing enough. Well, whose fault is that?
Yeah, that this whole year really changed my opinion of him. I love George Hill.
Yeah.
I can't call him one of the most underrated players in the league up until I heard, and I don't know if you guys heard this too, last year in the playoffs, he could have played, like, but he didn't want to kill his free agent value. And if he played, like, if he played at 90% versus 100%, and, like, he kind of...
He's an odd duck. Like, even Wes Matthews tore his Achilles and got a max. I mean, come on.
I mean, I heard that, and then I heard he's going to Sacramento for his money, and then he complained about the, you know, oh, they're not trying to win. It's Sacramento, bro.
What were you expecting? And they had just drafted De'Aaron Fox. Like, they just drafted a guy with their lottery pick that plays your position. So, like, what were you expecting?
Exactly. And then, like, you know what? We should have known this when he dyed his hair blonde in Indiana. That's when we should have known.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, let's talk about the West Finals. I mean, are the Rockets going to make this a series?
No. I knew this all. It's so funny how people do the same thing with the Warriors they do with LeBron James. The further you get away from their playoff heroics, people kind of, the greatness of it fades from the memories and becomes, well, maybe they're beatable. Maybe P.J. Tucker and Trevor Ariza and Clint Capella are the pieces that's going to propel the Rockets, you know, 6'2 Chris Paul and Harden. That's enough if you put, you know, P.J. Tucker and Luke, many names on the court, and that's going to be enough to beat the Warriors. And then we see what happens, and we're like, oh, yeah, that's right. This team has two MVP-caliber guys and, you know, two more All-Stars. Oh, yeah. You know, so I knew this was going to happen. And I love it because all the Rocket fans and the Rocket bloggers and all the analytics, the deep numbers guys who were looking and saying the offensive efficiency and net rating meant that the Rockets could do it, just like the Raptors with LeBron. Oh, yeah, this year their net rating is so much better. And then LeBron James just smashes them to bits, and you go, oh, yeah, he's LeBron James. Same thing with the Rockets and the Warriors. So.
I just think there's the experience factor, too. Like, the Warriors have been to this stage multiple times. They know how to handle it. They're not worried about, like, oh, can we get over the hump? They've been up and down the mountain so many times. Like, this is absolutely just another step. And for the Rockets, it's this hurdle, you know, this big challenge. And, I mean, Chris Paul just, you know, he finally got to the conference finals.
Yep.
But there's this, now there's this huge thing of, oh, well, can we break through? Can we get past this juggernaut? And it's like the Warriors are on the other end. They're not even stressing.
The Warriors are sitting back like, oh, that's cute.
This is our game.
Now, I will say this, like, you know, the Warriors, after being so dominant for years, of course, injuries came into play. They look like they have a little bit of that, like, the deep run fatigue, right? This is their fourth year in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they look like they're starting to get some of that, and like the improvements other teams have made is starting to, instead of blowing out teams every night by 20, it's, you know, 9, 10, 12 this season. So I'll be interested to see next year, you know, what moves happen this summer, and then next year the teams close the gap a little more, you know. So, but still, as of right now, they're still not just head and shoulders. They're head, shoulders, and torso above everybody else when they're locked in and engaged. So we'll see.
I just think that they've realized, like, oh, hey, we don't need to kill ourselves to be the number one seed to win a title. We don't need to beat teams by 30 in the middle of February. You know, we can just win by 10 and it counts the same. I mean, I think there's kind of that maturity and that wisdom that comes with that experience.
Well, see, and my thing is, I think part of what made them so dominant was they had a little nasty edge where they didn't want to just beat you. They wanted to crush you.
And embarrass you.
And losing that, you know, because, I mean, now it's just routine. Now it's almost like workaday. It's a job now. They're like, all right, we've been here. It does kind of nullify that edge, and I think Draymond's trying to keep it going, but even he now seems to be more like he's just bleeding, you know, just like you know, almost like a crazy person rather than an inspirational player, you know? So it's different. Nothing lasts forever. We'll see. I'm not saying next year. I'm not saying, who knows how long does he have to resign for, but something, you know, who knows? We'll see.
All right, got to talk about, and then we'll let you go, got to talk about your guy, Russell Westbrook. That you know, I'm a Russ fan just like you are. You're probably more of a Russ fan than I am, but I love Russ too. And that was just, that whole playoff series with Utah, it's just like, come on, man. Like, what was that? You know, like the whole, I'm going to shut that down with Ricky Rubio. It's like, come on, Russ, it's Ricky Rubio. Like,
he has, you don't always have had to... a petty war with Ricky Rubio.
Yeah, it's just, it's like, come on, Russ, like, you're better than this, dude. It was just weird. And Melo was terrible this year for them. That was just a bad fit. And Melo's just not good anymore. And just Paul George is probably gone. And I don't know, man. What's up with the Thunder?
I think Russell Westbrook, as we know him, is gone. This is the career arc, right? We watch a guy reach his potential, and then, like, the whole way it's all about potential. Then when he reaches the top, it's kind of like, it's, you know, which way is going to go? Is he going to kind of keep cruising and keep building on his legacy, or is it going to turn the other way? And I want to say, as much as I love Russ, he's starting to turn the wrong way. He became a caricature of himself this season. You know, all the talk and the bravado and the, we're going to be fine for the playoffs. We're not worried about nothing. Yet and still, we saw when it came to the playoffs, they met a real team that's together, the Jazz. They couldn't hack it, you know. And he, give him credit if you want. And, you know, I love the fact that he went out guns blazing. I think he took almost, what, like 35 shots, 40 shots a game those last two games.
Yeah.
But, you know, because that's who he is. But that's not how you win games. That's not how you build a lasting team. That started last summer, and somewhere along the way they missed some steps, and we watched the effects all season. They were never ever connected. They were never building anything great. They tried to go out there and out talent teams, and I think I overestimated how much Carmelo had left in the tank. He's popped. He's done. He's just not good anymore. I think Paul George played a little too Hollywood most nights, and as we saw, he had an issue with his elbow and his knee that he was dealing with. So you almost wish he had shut down in the season and got that taken care of, you know, and then, you know, missed a couple months or whatever, but whatever. So yeah, man, it was an embarrassing way to go out, especially after the great season Russell Westbrook had last year, where he was so inspirational and everybody was, you know, but he, you know, he, they try to do that back to back. Like, who? I didn't care about the triple doubles at all this year.
I didn't even know until after the regular season was over that he had was even close to averaging a triple double again. Like, I didn't even realize it.
He was like 16 rebounds away on the last night, wasn't he, or something like that? And he was just
He got him, or like two nights, like the game before the last one. It was whack, dude.
He had like 11 points and 18 rebounds and like 12 assists or something. It was so shameless.
So, like that, and the fact that we saw him, even win or lose, he was chasing his stats. It became apparent this year. I'm sure, you know, he did last year too, but like last year was fun. It was like part of the, he was doing the whole heroic thing and winning games. And then for him to, you know, this year it was, you're losing and you're still chasing triple doubles, man. It was, this summer they got to sit down with him and recalibrate and try to get him back to, you know, the things that matter. He says he always wants to win, but they need to say, you need to show us. And no, not show us. You can't talk to Russ like that, but you guys, you know, they got to try to get him back on track and get the joy back to his game, because nothing was fun for the Thunder this year. It was really a drag.
Appreciate you being on with us, man, and take care. Go Celtics. I'm pulling for them because I think the makeup of their team is fantastic.
It's a fun team.
It's a fun team to watch. I think Brad Stevens is terrific, and so I am happy for you. I'm happy that you're able to enjoy this, man.
My only one thing I wish is that I talked more crap before the playoffs and people would have thought I was crazy, but then I could now really like walk with my chest out, because now all I can do is find old takes where people said that Ainge was stupid or, you know, the Cavs are going to crush the Celtics, and I can just retweet those. I can't really talk a lot of crap myself because I myself picked against Boston, so darn it.
All right, man, we'll talk to you soon.
Love you guys.
Thanks, man.
James Hollis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin, joining us here on the Raised by Wolves podcast. Always good to have him on.
Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. But no, I think, you know, just speaking as like an outsider, you know, a non-Celtics fan per se, like that team is a hell of a lot of fun to watch. Just with Tatum and Brown and Al Horford. And why people still want to like crap on Al Horford is just astonishing to me,
because
like,
they never watched Al Horford. Like, yeah. You even saw it when he was chosen for the All-Star team. You were like, he averages 14 and 8. Like, what's the big deal? And it's like, okay, you just told on yourself that you don't watch his games and that you haven't watched his games.
And by the way, this year was not Al Horford's first All-Star appearance. People, like,
yeah,
he's been an All-Star before. You know, I don't know how many of you paid attention to the Atlanta Hawks over the last, oh, I don't know, decade.
They were fun to watch, too, those Hawks teams.
Yes, they were, with Teague and yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, come on, people. Al Horford is good. He's been good for a long time, and he is, what he does for the Celtics now is just, it's unbelievable.
I think he's gotten
that keeps them together.
He's gotten better, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think he was quite to this level in Atlanta in the way that he's running around now.
And he was damn good in Atlanta. Yeah. that's the thing, but yeah, the Celtics are fun, man, and I'm you know, of the four teams that are left, I mean, that's the team I'm pulling for. I mean, I think
like you're rooting for the Warriors,
right? I mean, you know, and the Warriors are in all likelihood going to win the title again just because they're rolling right now.
Like, do you watch Empire Strikes Back and just go, "Yeah, Vader, come on!"
Right, but yeah, the Celtics are fun. They're a fun team to root for. I mean, unless you're like a Cavs fan, or, you know, if you're like a longtime Lakers fan or whatever, then you're just, you know, like our guy Anthony Irwin might be kind of,
yeah,
he probably
yeah.
likes the makeup of the Celtics, but he's probably just like, man, I'm
stewing that day. Yeah. Resenting every minute of it.
We'll have to have him on again too at some point this summer. But thanks to James for joining us, and I think we're gonna get on out of here. But
we should actually bring in some of our blogger media friends who are covering lottery teams.
Yeah.
Since we no longer are, which is a weird foreign feeling, like following the draft lottery and be like, wait, I have no particular reason to pay attention to this.
I didn't even watch it. That's the crazy thing. I didn't even watch that was the first time I haven't watched the draft lottery in years.
I was like, oh, the Suns. They'll probably take DeAndre Ayton because they want like 9,000 big men.
Right. That they don't have enough
already. I mean, they need good ones, but they just haven't developed.
Right, exactly. All right. Thanks to James Hollis for joining us here on Raised by Wolves. You can find us, just search for us on iTunes. If you have not done that already, subscribe to us. Give us a rating. We'll certainly appreciate that. You can find us at podcastone.com and, of course, 1500ESPN.com as well. For Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves, and we'll talk to you again next week.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.